Saturday morning. Time to start that Saturday morning routine. And what's a Saturday morning without... Well, yeah, that too. But you also gotta have... About Your House.
Oh, this old house once knew its children. This old house once knew its wife. This old house was home and comfort as we fought the storms of life.
About Your House is brought to you by Carolina Foundation Solutions, a licensed contractor in North and South Carolina, servicing both residential and commercial with 7 offices. A trusted and professional foundation solution since 2002. If you have a problem, we have a solution. Call toll-free 877-770-7050 or online, carolinafoundationsolutions.com. Now, here's your host, Ray Terry.
Song just puts me where I need to be. Hope everybody had a great week. It's good to be here. Very moving show, I hope, today. I'm kind of jazzed about it, pumped up about it. And inspirations, full of inspirations today. It's been a kind of a, not kind of, just a very, very inspirational week for me. I want to share some of it. I took a trip south to Greenville. I was invited to a symposium, a construction symposium. And in today's world, one of the major, most talked about, most addressed topics are what I talk about here on this show. And that's putting tools in schools, changing career pathways, or creating awareness, because the opportunities have always been here. I think the problem, as I've been preaching here for the past year and a half, is an awareness problem. And it's a brainwashing problem, too, in the fact that so many people believe the only way to stardom and success, and that's the words I use, are through a degree in higher education. Well, you know, higher education's necessary in so many ways, but we have abused it and literally created a dilemma and took away a workforce that we need desperately, and we're in a crunch right now. But more than that, the awareness for me is making people aware that we need to be happy and live with purpose. It seems to you know, that to me is the number one thing in life. Take it beyond college, beyond anything. For example, I spoke to a homeless gentleman over the weekend, last weekend. Somebody showed up at my back door, literally, and saw that I had all these yard tools. And I do. I have quite a selection of yard tools. Rakes, mini rakes, sharpshooter shovels, round shovels, square shovels. I got shovels. I got all kind of implements of dirt moving. Okay. And I know how personally to move some dirt, too. But, you know, the funny thing is no tool up there did I purchase. They were all hand-me-downs from people who moved or had this, had that. Although I've enjoyed them all and used quite a bit of them. But point is, someone's looking in my door and see all this stuff. Oh, you got tools. Oh, yeah, we got tools. What you doing? And they wanted to borrow them. Anyway, they commenced borrowing my tools and cleaning up the area that my warehouse is in, you know, that cleaning it up. And 14 years I've been in this warehouse for business, and no one's ever done that. I felt like it was a gift. Whoa. Anyway, that guy got out there, and he was just energetic, full, absolutely full of excuse me, energy, full of energy and passion for cleaning up out there. Did a great job. And told him, I said, you don't need to rake. I got a leaf blower. Well, he raked and leaf blow. So anyway, and we got to talking, and he talked to me a little bit. He said, do you know where I could get a job? So I needed more information, obviously. You know, it's all about information. And I said, well, first of all, how old are you? He told me he's in his 30s. And then the lady that was with him is the shop owner to, you know, where they're cleaning up behind. Okay. And, you know, one thing led to, and I said, first of all, I don't want you to have a job. I want you to have a career. I want you to find your purpose. He says, what do you love to do? And he told me, he said, I love to organize and clean up and make things right. Wow. That's great. Well, you know, last Saturday we had after disaster on a restoration company, and I said immediately, wow, what a fit. What a fit for that gentleman. And I looked at him, and I says, could you pass a drug test? And he says, no, sir. And I says, why? He says, and he wouldn't answer me, of course. Most people are very fearful and reluctant to answer that question. I said, marijuana, pot, cannabis? He said, yes, sir. Is that all? Shoot straight with me. He said, that's all. I says, got it. Well, you got to figure a way around that. And I don't know how. It's the biggest problem going on in construction hiring today. One of the largest, getting people that can pass a drug test. And some people don't even go apply for the job because of the drug test. I bring that up for a very obvious reason. We need to change your damn drug testing policies. And then you get into insurance, and then more rules on top of rules, more rules and regulations, and look what it's doing to lives. But yet, you can go get a prescription for Klonopin or any other pharmaceutical drug that's going to blow out your mind, kidneys, and liver. You can do that. It's okay. Well, anyway, I made my point. But my point about this gentleman is we've got a labor shortage, and I'm going to figure out a way. We need to collectively, and that's what this symposium was about. That's what it was all about, is the construction or workforce, not the construction workforce necessarily. And this isn't just about construction career opportunities. It's about manufacturing opportunities as well. They kind of fit hand in hand. So it was absolutely mind-blowing. For me, it was overwhelming and very, very, very inspirational. There again, I got the industry side, and there was a lot of industry people there. And it was sponsored, I guess, or administered by Clemson University. And it was great. So anyway, during the afternoon, Adam Hoots had a panel of five up there from the industry, five people that represented the AGC. Association of General Contractors of the Carolinas, ABC, Miss Amy Hicks. She heads up that. And through that, I got a lot of help for our up-and-coming event. Through that symposium, I say. Also, I've got more career opportunity programs coming up for various age groups. The Explorer Scouts, for example. ABC of the Carolinas got a program coming up in January next year. Let's just call it next year, for an exploring opportunity, discovering your future, and a new program called PACE. And I'm not allowed to divulge much information at this time. They told me I couldn't yet. And plus, I would rather them, the representatives of their group, to come on the show here and talk about it, because that's a point that I'm trying to get across to all of us and you parents out there as well. And now with the pandemic and all this mayhem about forcing people to do things they don't want to do, taking away their freedoms and literally bullying them into something they don't want to do, is going to come back, and it is coming back to bite us in the ass big time. People, wake up. They're taking your freedoms away, and they're forcing things on us that you ain't even seen the beginning of yet. You better wake up. I'm wide awake, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed. But right now, I can't conquer all those issues, but I can do this. I can work wholeheartedly, full steam ahead, to change some kids' lives and directions into being more happy, purpose-filled lives. Engaging them with creativity, thinking, having purpose, and being able to see the results other than a test paper. It doesn't exist much in our schools. And this was brought up during this symposium as well. So I needed, you know, after all this, I'm going up there in years, and I'm passionate about it. And if it bugs you folks, you listeners out there, and you don't want to hear it anymore, fine, change the channel. But we got to do something. We have to do something, because stupid, I've said this for years, it's funny, has turned into a big, serious illness. And if that offends, so be it. I don't care. But anyway, Adam Hoots is going to call me. I'm going to talk to Adam. He has become a tremendous inspiration for me to move on, to get with it, to open my eyes clearly and wrap my soul and spirit around something and go forward till the day I die with the endeavors of teaching and helping and pushing, if necessary, kids and adults. Because to me, anybody under 40, you're a kid. You know, I've lived long enough where I can say that. And I will say that. And I do say that. So stay tuned for today's show. First hour, we're going to talk to Adam Hoots down in Greenville with Skilled Trades Alliance, excuse me. I'm going to talk to Adam and talk to him about what we are going to do together. And I say we, this is not Adam, not Ray Terry, the industry, what the industry is going to do together, because we identified something there at that meeting. We identified the fact that we're fragmented. The industry is all over the place, except on the right page together. We're not reading from the same chapter even, if you get my analogy. And we need to come together as an industry and embrace this issue in many different ways. And it's only going to help homeowners and mothers and fathers and most of all kids in the coming years ahead. We need to change the way we're doing things. And we need to be more happy, and we need to eliminate fear. Fear needs to go by the wayside. We need to embrace the realities, deal with them, and be happy and spread some love. Yeah, spread love. That's what it's all about. And man, the guy I'm going to talk to here in a minute, he's all about spreading love, even the tough love. And in hour two today, I'm honored to have the F3 Men's Group in the house, in studio. David Redding, Pete Sheppel, and Eric Thornfelt, three men of F3. We're going to talk about leadership, which we drastically need to teach. Leadership. I just had a conversation with Mr. Darren Gardner here about leadership, basically. You know, we need to teach our youth to be leaders, to be less fearful of making a decision. Because you know what? The last thing any of us want to do innately is screw up. We don't want to screw up, but you know what? You don't really learn till you screw up good. You got to. It's just part of it. But you embrace that screw up and you don't say, oh, no. No, you grab a hold, get up, keep going forward with opportunity. And that's what we got to teach kids. But they're fearful. They're fearful. I know it because I talk to them every day. And when I say kids, like I say, 40 or less to me, children, they've been taught. I'm going to throw out a couple names here. Homework. I'm going to just interject this. Folks, if you want to know what's going on, go back to 1969. G. Edward Griffin. It's one name. G. Edward Griffin, 1969. Search that on YouTube. Now, here's the biggie. Man made a speech, a Russian KGB defector named Yuri Bezmenov. Yuri Bezmenov. Bezmenov. Made a speech in 1984. Actually, an interview. Very interesting. It'll tell you all about what's going on right now. Pay attention. I did. Some 10 years ago, I heard both of them. I do research. I educate myself so I can be a better me. We all need to do that. Stop listening and go for the truth. I'll be right back with more About Your House and Adam Hoots.
Paying every day.
Once again, a friend of mine now, I will always call him a dear friend and a inspiration. And I really am grateful that I met the guy. I want to thank Michael Realon for that. Bring up Adam, if you would. Adam Hoots, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Ray Terry. How are you?
I am magnanimous. I am really good. Thank you. And I have you to thank for that. You're such an inspiration, and I really want to on the air here, have a personal conversation with you as well as a business conversation, and I hope that doesn't bother you. But
nothing bothers me with you, sir.
But I want to read something that you will connect with, I'm sure, okay? And I want to share it with the listeners. I read this when I came home the other night, or right before, and it meant so much because it kind of states a situation that I'm very touched by. Grandpa, some 90-plus years, sat feebly on the patio bench. He didn't move, just sat with his head down, staring at his hands. When I sat down beside him, he didn't acknowledge my presence. And the longer I sat, I wonder if he was okay. Finally, not really wanting to disturb him, but wanting to check on him, at the same time, I asked him if he was okay. He raised his head and looked at me and smiled. "Yes, I'm fine. Thank you for asking," he said in a clear, strong voice. "I didn't mean to disturb you, Grandpa, but you were just sitting there, staring at your hands. And I wanted to make sure you were okay," I explained to him. "Have you ever looked at your hands?" he asked. "I mean, really looked at your hands." I slowly opened my hands and stared down at them. I turned them over, palms up, then palms down. "No, I guess I never really have looked at my hands," as I tried to figure out the point he was making. Grandpa smiled and related this story. "Stop and think for a moment about the hands you have, how they have served you well throughout your years. These hands, though wrinkled, shriveled and weak, have been the tools I have used all my life to reach out and grab and embrace life. They put food in my mouth and clothes on my back. As a child, my mother taught me to fold them in prayer. They tied my shoes and pulled on my boots. They have been dirty, scraped, raw, swollen, and bent. They were uneasy and clumsy when I tried to hold my newborn sons. Decorated with my wedding band, they showed the world that I was married and loved someone very special. They trembled and shook when I buried my parents and spouse and walked my daughter down the aisle. They have covered my face, combed my hair, and washed and cleansed the rest of my body. They have been sticky and wet, bent and broken, dried and raw, and to this day, when not much of anything else of me works real well, these hands hold me up, lay me down, and again continue to fold in prayer. These hands are the mark of where I've been and the ruggedness of my life. But more importantly, it will be these hands that God will reach out and take when he leads me home. And with my hands, he will lift to his side, and there I will use these hands to touch the face of Christ. I will never look at my hands the same again. But I remember when God reached out and took my grandpa's hands and led him home. So when my hands hurt or sore, I think of Grandpa. I know he has been stroked and caressed and held by the hands of God. I, too, want to touch the face of God and feel his hands upon my face. Just saying. Wow. Powerful. I wanted to share that with you, Adam, because you bring a lot out in a lot of people, and you're an inspiration. And I thank you for inviting me to this symposium and pulling these industry people together that all have the same passion or all want to share in your passion and your dreams of making the world a better place through Skilled Trades Alliance. And I appreciate it. I want you to know that.
Likewise, Ray, thank you. First off, I'm a firm, I love the hands gesture. I'm a firm believer that God gave us hands in order to use them to serve others. He gave us feet so that we could run to others. That's what life's about, is serving others. And I think, the more people I am around, like yourself, like Miss Kayleen McCabe, and other, like these, you folks give me energy, right? And so it's not by anything that I'm doing. It's certainly the grace of God, and all glory to him, because that's where we really are able to be servant leaders. And I'm just thankful you came to the symposium. We saw some really special things happen with the major construction agencies aligning, and this is just the start of it. I'm really excited for them to get together. You know, that's the AGC, ABC, NAHB, and NCCER. And they got some really tough questions when we didn't just sit up there on stage and be the panel, but we flipped the room and allowed the audience to be the panel. And you captured that moment perfect, Ray, when you took it. And, you know, I could see the folks from Clemson getting a little uncomfortable because we were encouraging the not so much go to college all the time, you know. Yeah. And it was a great thing. It really was. Thank you for showing up, as you always do.
Well, no, I haven't enough here lately. I've been a little burnt out, you might say, or misdirected, maybe. I don't know. But you kind of reeled me back in, bud. I appreciate it. And one thing I want to share with you, too. I really enjoyed dinner at your house. But when you took me out on your patio, and I want to share this with you. I haven't yet. We haven't talked because I like to talk on air with real people like you. You took me out and showed me the structure you made for your wife. And I met you and talked to you and had conversation with you. Between what you showed me and those conversations, you told me everything about you. You truly did. And you're a hell of a guy. And I want you to share with folks, I understand something that we haven't had a discussion about. And I want to bring it up. Something about your kidneys or a kidney transplant. Can you share that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. So when I was 29 years old, my mother gave me life twice. When I was going through college, I didn't treat my body real, real good and ended up on kidney dialysis for a year and a half. And if anybody knows what kidney dialysis is like, it's miserable. That life is awful. It's terrible. I'm a very happy-go-lucky, positive person, and I wanted to kill myself during that period. Mental health struggles were real. And going through that, you know, I thought I was going to die. I really did. And I ended up finding something called lean and adding value to my life, providing more value to this world while we're here. And I'm convinced January 7th of 2014, when I woke up from my kidney transplant, that I was in heaven because my life has been perfect ever since. You know, I've got a beautiful wife. I've got three young, healthy, smart children. I have a good profession. I enjoy what I do. I mean, it was an experience like no other. And we used that to create Kidney, which is a not-for-profit organization where we make cross bracelets and we send them out to people. What's your favorite color, Mr. Ray?
I'd have to say blue.
All right.
Although
I'm gonna get one in the mail to you here. I won't ask you for your address on air.
Look, Adam, something you need to know about me out of the book. I'm an open book. You can get to me. All you need to do, anyone out there, is Google Ray Terry, Charlotte, North Carolina. It's all right there. My homepage of the website not only has my cell number, it's got, I think, my personal address. And if I told you, gave you my physical address where I live, you couldn't get there unless I told you how. You'd come to the front door and no one would ever hear you there. So anyway.
Well, I love that. I'll get one out to you. And I just, you know, want to change the world in a positive way, whether that's bringing folks to the skilled trades, whether that's, you know, entertaining folks on dialysis or helping new kidney transplant patients go through some of the learnings that I had. You know, we've been blessed with a privilege. And I don't use that word lightly. And I think it's our responsibility, again, through those hands that you talked about, to spread that privilege to as many people and communities as we possibly can.
So. Yes. And once again, I want to kind of state that I go to events and I talk my truth and what I know, and that's all I can do. And when I do start saying things about higher education in colleges, it normally rattles people's cages. And one of the reasons all they hear is one side of it. I'm not ever saying that a higher education isn't a good thing. I'm just saying it is not necessary to be all you can be. As a matter of fact, there's two sides of the coin that we have, and we've forgotten one half of the equation, and that's constructive, creative thinking, working with your hands. I only say it because it's a fact. How do we how do we reinstall that in a culture that has turned literally blind and stupid to the fact? Because
I got an idea, Mr. Ray.
What's that?
Let's put tools in schools, huh?
Let's
it's
do.
A genius idea.
Let's do.
Somebody, I can't remember who it was, told me about it.
yeah. You know, well, I tell you, I think, you know, and I, once again, you've inspired me to go harder and drive deeper and get, you know, and do what we can do. And while I was there at the meeting, I got an email from one of the counselors at East MEC telling us that we could get back on the campus. However, if we've got to wear a face mask, I don't know that that's going to happen because, folks, the trades cannot work with a mask on. It's unhealthy. We breathe hard. We work hard. Can't do it. Can't do it. Sorry. I just had to throw that in there. At any rate, things are happening in a very positive way, and you're part of that. For me, Adam, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ray, because you inspire me just the same. And I'm super excited for April 2nd. I hope I didn't let the cat out of the bag.
No, not. I've been talking about this. No.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to being there. Hopefully we can get Miss Kayleen there. We can get all these industry players. We'll get higher education there. Let's educate everybody on these amazing opportunities that are out there. I am fired up over that.
Let's do it. We're going to do it. April 2nd at Total Solar Power, 1201 Carrier Drive in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's right off I-85, easy access, great place, great facility we can have it at. It's going to be, and, you know, and there again, if I hadn't have shown up, wouldn't have gotten the support from Miss Amy at ABC and Sarah. And you know what's amazing, and I got to share this, the women in construction. Wow. Man, if you want something done, give it to a bunch of ladies. They'll get it done. And I witnessed that at this symposium, and it was very prevalent. Thank you for that.
That's exactly right. You know, Harvard Business Review did an article not too long ago that they studied the leadership qualities.
Right.
And it's proven science that women are better leaders than men.
Yep. I concur 100%. And I hope men don't take any offense to that. Learn from it. Pay attention. There's a reason.
100% agree. We can learn from every situation.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, we should. Technical. We should.
Inquiry over advocacy all day, every day.
Right. Well, I want to have a conversation with you next week when you can fit it in. You're going to Phoenix, I understand?
I will be. I'll be out there for the Lean Construction Institute's Congress. There's two times I can't talk. Other than that, I'll make you a priority.
Well, I just want to discuss some things moving forward, but, you know, we got time. I was going to Boston, but my trip's been called, unfortunately, due to a family health issue, and hopefully everything's all right with that. But regardless, I'll be around. Love to talk to you more, and I'm sure we will. We'll be in connection. Thank you, Adam, for everything. Really appreciate you.
Thank you, Ray. And I'm excited for the rest of this show. F3, you're inspiring me on so many platforms. I am grateful for our relationship and look forward to figuring out what God's intending for it to be.
Well, we'll keep going down the path for sure and be the best we can be at it. That's all we can hope for. And one more thing in closing. Going back to your kidney issue that I was unaware of, I was aware but not totally aware. People, you said something about dialysis. And in the medical arena today in America, people don't realize that kidney failure and kidney issues are at an all-time high, basically epidemic levels. Dialysis has never been in greater need, and very, very few people understand what dialysis is. Relative to what it is. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, you're 100% right.
And there's a time going down the road here that I want to have a more in-depth conversation just to make people aware. Could you do that?
I'm there, yes. I mean, we could do it right now if we had the time. It's such an important concept, and you know, the United States of America spends a lot of money on nurses, technicians, treating people at centers, And it's all people are capable of doing it at home on their own accord, looking out for themselves. And so that's another big topic. But in just the mental health side, yes, 100% I'm there. I will show up like you show up every single time.
Well, I appreciate it. We need to share more of what we go through in Western medicine that is absolutely appalling to our general health as a whole. And we need to wake up to that fact and take better control of our health. Personally, and it's proven.
Yeah.
It's proven, and you've
another
done
another thing that tools and schools guy told me was there's a lot of wealth in health.
Yeah, health is wealth for sure.
Health is. Yeah.
The older you get, the more valuable it becomes.
Amen.
I mean, it's like an investment, and that's I had a conversation with a gentleman in line to get my adult beverage after the event. Turned around, and I'm going to share this with everyone. He said, the guy was 100, maybe 120 pounds overweight. I mean, he was very big, obese, okay? And he says, I love what you said at the talk there, but you know that question when they said, would you recommend the traits to your kids? I'd have to say no. And I says, really? Why? Insurance. You can't get good insurance in construction. And I looked at him and I said, my gosh. So the game of insurance, and I just said it, the game of insurance is your decisive move over whether you go to the trade or not. Man, is he in the Matrix or what? Folks.
Yeah, he's missing it.
I mean, you miss it totally. Anyway. I wanted to share that because health is wealth. If you're healthy, you don't need the insurance quite as much, do you? I don't.
Not at all. And being in the trades, moving, being outside.
That's healthy. Healthy.
Yes, it is. It's like a workout every single day.
Yep, sure is. I love it. And people say, when are you going to retire? I don't plan to. I'll always
what does that
have.
Mean?
What is retirement? If you get up every day just like you do, Adam, and you love what you do, you don't have a job, do you?
No, sir. I have a life, a lifestyle.
A purpose. Purpose.
Yes, sir.
Iggy guy. Ha ha.
Look at you with your Japanese words, Mr. Ray.
Well, you taught me that one. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I'll talk to you after Phoenix and see what you learned. How's that?
You better be ready because it'll be a mouthful, I'm sure. I appreciate you just having me here. I love everything.
Uh-oh. You cut my boy Adam off. Adam, I'm sorry. I lost Adam. Phone mishap. It's okay. We'll recover. Did you get? All right. Whoever called, I'm sorry, Adam. Adam's, I had a little mishap there. Adam pushed the wrong button. I apologize. That was Adam Hoots, folks, with the Skilled Trade Alliance, heavily into increasing awareness and raising the bar, and I really appreciate him. I appreciate all that he does. And, you know, speaking about what we're doing, the associations around Charlotte of industry need to wake up and come together as an industry and address the issues. Just address the issues that we're going through in the labor shortage. But there's much more to it than a labor shortage. There's a lifestyle shortage of people doing what they're passionate about. Not knowing what you're passionate about or not having the menu of the realities of life to choose from. Kids in schools don't have that anymore. As I had conversations with people at this meeting, I sat beside one guy, and here again, I heard the same thing. You mean there's no shop in class? I mean, in schools? There are shops around in rural America to some degree, but pretty much gone by the wayside back in the 70s and 80s. They pulled all the, you know, machinery, shop tools, sheet metal, woodworking, all those tools came out of college. I mean, excuse me, schools, public schools, for liability's sake or whatever. I don't know. But at any rate, we need to come together, find more leadership speaking of leadership, so, man, I'm going to have a room full. Looking forward to it. Got an educator, attorney, and a business fella all coming in to help, inspire, lead, and challenge. And we'll get her done. All right. Is it okay if we scoot out early? We can do that. And by the way, Mr. Darren Gardner, I want to go ahead and grab that phone call for we might see what goes on here. All right, we're going to bring in to our guest when we come back a little early, but that's okay. I like early. We can make it happen. It's what we do. We got a caller, or was that a no call? No problem. We're going to take a break here, folks. 704-227-8800 is the number. I know we're getting a little deep, a little serious on you, but, hey, life's that way sometimes. You need to grab the bull by the horns, shake him. 704-227-8800. Fox Sports Charlotte, best way to hear us, stream us. It's easy. Or if you got Alexa, hey, Alexa, play Fox Sports Charlotte. She'll dial right in, I promise you. Easy as pie. Or FoxSportsRadioCharlotte.com. Press a little blue arrow and you can stream us live there. Or inside the 485 Beltway, 94.7 FM, if you hold your tongue right. We'll be right back. Once again, my apologies for cutting off Adam, but he'll be back on the show. You bet on that. Trying to look at my text. And people, you're free to text me a question, a comment, but be nice. 704-712-4644. That is my cell number. 704. Oh, now I can look at him now and see definitely a military man. Hey, you're a dread. I'd rather shake your hand. There you go. All right. Where was I? I don't know. My brain. Whew. I'm excited. I got. Are you late? Yeah. What's with that?
No, I just wanted to apologize if I was late.
No, you're not late. You're not late. All right. I got to introduce my guys in the studio today. I feel honored. And like I was saying, my text number, my cell number, 704-712-4644. That is my cell number. You're free to text me if you wish, comment, whatever you want to do. Or you can call me. I just won't answer it. I'm on air. Come on. Get with it. Wake up. 704-712-4644. All right. And you can call the number right here in the studio, 704-227-8800. Where'd that ding come from? I thought I turned it off. Okay. We're done. All right. Everything's off. Y'all's phone off? Y'all better than me. Yeah, just I'll remind you. All right. Time for intros. First of all, I'm honored. F3. I can pull it up here, the F3 Nation. I'll let them tell you what that's about. They do great stuff. I got David Redding. Wow. A veteran. Airborne.
Oh, yeah.
How many years?
Nine.
9 years.
9 years.
Yeah. And then he's an attorney, a litigator. Whoa. Boy ain't afraid to talk.
No, that's what I get paid to do. Mm-hmm.
I know. Yeah. That's what I say. Yeah. Yeah. When I said, and damn, he's an officer in the Army. Oh, my goodness.
Was.
Well, okay, yeah. Was. Used to, used, you're still a leader.
That's yeah, what, well, that's true. Never stopped being a leader.
I know. It's so obvious when I went on F3 and looked at the mission. This is military discipline 101.
A bit.
A bit?
Well.
Getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning? That's more than a bit.
Well, that's a matter of convenience.
No, David, I know that. Yeah. I'm just messing with you.
That's okay.
It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Really is. I'm honored, honestly. And I read you're an attorney and litigator. Are you still doing criminal?
No, I never do criminal.
Never?
No.
Cool.
All civil.
I'd like to get into that, but we won't today. Okay. In F3, they go by names, correct? And by the way, let me finish. I got David Redding. He's an attorney by occupation, correct? I've got Eric Thornfelt.
Thornfelt.
Felt or
torn,
felt?
Torn, like the felt that was torn.
Torn?
Like a...
And he's used to saying that, too.
Very much so.
Because he's confronted with that a lot, I can tell, right out of the gate. Thornfelt.
That's right.
Thornfelt. See, I didn't pay attention, did I? And he's an educator, can you tell? he's assistant principal at Sedgefield Middle School, my alma mater, if that's what they call it. That's where I went for 3 years back when it was a junior high school. And I learned, speaking of hands-on and learning, that was the most instrumental years of my education at Sedgefield Middle. I took shop. I got to tell the story again. When you're on the radio for 27 years, you tell a lot of stories over and over again. I took shop, industrial arts, they called it, and it was kind of split up. You would go to woodworking and then the other side, and it was Mr. Campbell and Mr. Boyd. They were both absolutely wonderful mentors to me, and I loved it back then. And I was, you look back in retrospect, and that's how we learn, hopefully. You know, learn from your mistakes and screw-ups and foul-ups. But that was so beneficial for me. And I'll never forget Sedgefield. It's part of my life forever because he came to me one day and he says, Ray, you got this carpentry thing down, so don't, but I want to, would you be interested in printing? I said, printing? And there was an offset printing press in the back corner there, glassed in, with an offset printing. And then he took me in there and showed me the print and setting. He says, would you be interested in doing this? Sure. Why not? Man, printing press, wow. And I wound up printing the student directories for the school. I printed them all by myself, laid the pages out and everything. So not only did I take shop and woodwork, metal, I can't remember what we did in metal, but it was just a wonderful time. And Miss Steele, I can remember more teachers' names. And Miss... can't remember the art teacher's name, but art was so beneficial to me back then. Because art and working with your hands is the same thing. It's the same thing. And that's why I'm pissed off because they took tools out of schools. Because we as human beings are animals. We tend to forget that. And we were given two hands and a lot of talent innately when we're born. And then they go to school and they take it away from you. And that's really what's happening. So, back to Eric Sedgefield. What got you into education, sir? First of all, where are you from?
Yeah, kind of all over. So I did most of my growing up in Buffalo, New York. Went to college down in South Carolina. And I moved to Charlotte, and I thought, I want to impact kids, I think. And so I did a graduate program at UNCC. I started teaching. Found a knack for it, felt like I was doing all right with it,
right?
And just kind of kept doing it. And, I think that a lot of the things that we do in F3, being a part of F3, is really what I wanted to do in education, right? I wanted to impact awesome. The young men. Yeah. I wanted to impact citizenship for our country. I wanted to impact our community, all those things. And so I saw education as a vehicle to do that. So I did teaching for a while, moved into administration. I was at Geringer High School. You are also alma mater, right?
Yeah, right. Wow, what a small world.
And then I went to Sedgefield. And so now I'm in a place where I feel like I'm able to live out a lot of my values through education. However, I also feel that education right now is a little bit of a broken system, right? And so some of the things that you're talking about, it putting tools in schools, and you know, I look at it more as putting some manhood back in schools, right? Putting some responsibility back in schools, putting citizenship back in schools,
right?
And so, so that's just a little bit about me. I've been in Charlotte Mecklenburg schools for quite a while. Seen a lot of changes, I'm here today because I look at myself more as a student of education in a lot of ways, even though it is my job. But I also am thinking through.
No, it's your career.
It is.
See, I'm tired of that word job. I told somebody the other day, I said, I don't want you to have a job. I want you to have a career and a purpose. You know, that's really what it's all about. You got headphones? Who does?
I don't have headphones.
Yeah. They're not working?
No, yeah. I thought you were saying take them off.
No. No, you got a purpose.
Right.
That's what you got. Or you wouldn't be here. I mean, really, you wouldn't be sitting there if you did. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't be in F3. And that's why I wanted you guys really on the show. I met Pete, or Pete met me, I don't know which.
I reached out.
2-3 years back. Now I got Pete Sheppel. And their names are, now that you know who they are, they're Dredd. That's David Redding. Pete is Chelms. Does that have an S on the end?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chelms.
You name me, Dredd. Yeah. So.
Chelms. And then Dr. Belding. Mm-hmm. And that's their names on the show from this point forward.
We got seven Dr. Beldings, by the way.
Yeah.
Seven Dr. Beldings.
Yeah. Every vice principal is Dr. Belding, I think.
Gotcha. Yeah. That works.
Yeah, that's literally, I think we do.
Yeah, I think
there's one in Toledo. There's one in Greenville North. Probably one in Greenville South.
Pete, what do you do? We've never had a conversation about what you do every day in life other than your purpose on what you're doing.
My career is I'm a CPA. I'm an accountant.
A numbers man.
A numbers man.
Okay, cool.
And I'm pretty good at it.
Better you than me.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at it. But, you know, the reason I'm here, reason I called you several years ago when I listened to the radio show, I also, like Eric, have a passion for young kids, helping them become better people, better citizens, and what I heard you doing just resonated with me, and so that's why I called you. Dredd and F3 have given me a lot of tools and just things about that I never was taught when I was younger about purpose.
Right.
You mentioned that. About, we have this saying, and Dredd can go into it, dolphin and daffodil. The daffodil is the group you're meant to serve, and the dolphin is your strength. And when you meet those two meet, that's impact.
Right.
And Dredd, you can...
Well, I'm going to get to him after the break. We're up against the clock, and I'm going to take a top-of-the-hour break. When we come back, we're going to plow the garden, okay?
Sounds good.
We're going to sow some seeds and see what happens, okay? We might let them sprinkle a little water on them. All right, 704-227-8800. That's the number. Come on back here. We've got the F3 men's group. That's what we call it. What do you call it, sir?
F3.
F3, just plain old F3. Yeah. I mentioned it at a symposium I was at Thursday, and many people are very much aware. And one day I had a guest on the show. He said, Ray, have you ever heard of F3? Because some of what you are after is same things I've heard. I said, yes, as a matter of fact, they're going to be on the program. So we're going to cover it in a little more depth when we get back on the other side, more about your house. Stay tuned.
Yeah, running down a dream. Never would come to me. Working on a mystery. Going wherever it leads. Running down a dream. I felt so good. Like anything was possible.
All right. Welcome back. Hour number two. Getting a little directed here on the program today. Trying to we're addressing issues that confront our culture as a whole. Well, and lack of, one of my thing is I venture through life and I've lived life and I've deal with all sorts of people in my career. I'm in the home improvement, maintenance. I'm in helping people career, you know, because that's what I do. I help people. You know, I even was asked the other day, Ray, just what is it you do? Interesting. What do you want done? Kind of thing, you know? And that's kind of what I do. Now, I'm not an attorney, although I've been asked to be one or assist, but nope, won't go there. Not my job, it's his. But one of the things I've noticed in everywhere I go is lack of leadership. Everybody's afraid to lead. And we're doing this in our school system, our education system, as I see it. We're teaching people to obey. Get in line, listen, and obey. And then if you can't do that, you need to go on a prescription for Adderall to keep you focused. You can be a druggie as long as you play by our educational rules. They suck, and we need to change it. We need to instill more creativity and leadership and care with purpose in our schools. That's a mouthful, I know, but something needs to be done because we don't have any leadership. And I think it's tied to military discipline. I look at it that way because I served in the military. I got up at 5 o'clock every morning and went out and did calisthenics and physical PT, physical training. Loved it. Loved every minute of it. To this very day, it's probably the most invigorated I've ever been. And I'm glad I did it. Now, let's get to the root, the story. F3. Dredd, you're the founder, I understand.
I'm one of the founders, yeah. There's two, but I'm one of them.
Well, you're half the equation.
Yeah.
Tell the story.
So F3 started here in Charlotte 10 years ago on 1-1-11 with a couple of guys, me and a guy whose F3 name is OBT. And we've been part of a men's workout group that have been getting up on Saturday mornings here for a few years. And it had grown to the size of about 30 guys, and that made it untenable because it lost a bit of the fellowship because of the size. So we started a new one, and it was January 1st, 2011, at AG Middle School here in Charlotte, not the middle school you went to.
It's right around the corner.
Not far from. We sent out about 80 emails, hoping we'd get 5 guys and be able to build that group up to about 15, 20 by the end of the year. The first day we had 30. Now I figured that was a New Year's resolution thing, and it would diminish, but the next week we had 35. And we never had less than that. And really from the start, our problem was not getting men to come out to work out together in what we call the gloom, the early morning. Our problem was having enough leaders to lead them because we think you get a diminishing return to fellowship at about 18. So you get over 18 and you start to lose that sense of fellowship that's so important to our group. So we started asking guys to lead and they, of course, said, no, I don't know how to do it. I mean, that's bricks without straw. You know, for me, it was like falling off a rock because I'd been in the Army for 9 years. I knew how to lead PT. That's actually really all I knew how to do. But that skill thing.
No, you talk loud.
Yeah, I talk loud. I took that skill a bit for granted.
Yeah.
And realizing that we had to transfer that skill through positive habit transfer, we created a little mini school to do it. And that created materials to back it up. And that just evolved into F3 being what we say is more than just a workout group. It's actually a leadership group. So our stated purpose, which is ironic since you pretty much said it, is our purpose is to invigorate male community leadership. That's our desired end state. That's the vision. When we have invigorated male community leadership, I guess we can take the group down. The task, how we get there, is to plant, grow, and serve small men's workout groups. So put those things together, and that is our mission. Plant, grow, serve men's small workout groups in order to invigorate male community leadership. We have a credo that supports that, a statement of beliefs that summarizes it, that's easier to remember, which is simply, we leave no man behind, but we leave no man where we find him. So every man is welcome to F3. That's pretty much rule number one, if there is a rule. But once you get there, we are going to try to help you accelerate in your life, wherever we happen to find you. So we have guys who've lost 100 pounds. We have guys who've gotten there already in good shape and then gotten in great shape. We have guys whose marriages were coming apart. We have men, sadly, or I guess the opposite, who were contemplating suicide, but that this helped them. Now, I think it's an amazing thing. It's been a great honor to have been in Manhattan standing there when the group started, but it's really on the backs and through the efforts of all these various men who are part of F3. We think it's about 53,000 men throughout the world now.
How many?
53,000. That's a guess. Mm-hmm. We do know we have, I think, 48 states, 6 countries, and almost 3,000 individual workouts. We have a little ticker on this website to keep up with it. So it's proliferated throughout the world like mustard seeds. Just kind of floats through the air and lands, very small efforts, water, grow, and grows into something big and strong. And that's kind of how it's worked. So interesting what you said. For me personally, it was that I missed. I was lonely, fat, unhappy, and without purpose. And I thought, what was the greatest part of being in the military? It was the morning PT. So we recreated that one little thing, and then from there arose all these other things that are of value.
I remember the last day of basic training. The last day, you know, your drill sergeant, which I was squad leader number 4. So I led the pack, so to speak. You know, that's the point.
Right.
And I was squad leader number 4. And we ran 5 miles. We started with 1, 2. You wanted another one? Yes, drill sergeant. You want another one? Yes, drill sergeant. And we just kept going. Never felt as good or as pumped up, psyched about life as I did that day, knowing it was my last day and my butt was going home. You know, but still the accomplishment. And I didn't get a certification or degree, but I got a sense of pride, I guess, just like nothing else. But that's gone, basically. That methodology is not what it once was, you know. But what now? The military arena around it, you know, the discipline is what I see in F3. And how important discipline is in our lives. But, you know, when you say there's no leadership, that's mental discipline. That's self-confidence. That's knowing you're going to desire to do the right thing. And that's missing. People don't know what that is anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I think that leadership is not well understood. In F3, we have a fairly well-defined system to say what the skills of a leader are and then what the characteristics of a leader are, and we separate those two things. So we don't say there's anything like a good leader, because
no.
We just say there's an effective leader, and that's just a man who can influence movement to advantage. So if you can do that, you're a leader, and then we have specific skill sets that we teach to learn that, and then we have characteristics of a leader that make you not just effective but virtuous, because Hitler was effective.
But he
wasn't virtuous, right? So, right. You know, that is kind of the issue that we see, is it's really not well understood. Leadership's not well understood. And like any other skill, it has to be taught, and then it has to be practiced. So we have a
practice makes perfect.
That's right. But we have a leadership development process, which has schooling in it, which is didactic. You know, here are the timeless principles of leadership. You can learn them in a classroom. You can learn them at West Point. You can read them in Leadership for Dummies. But there has to be some didacticism to it, some schooling. But then you have to have apprenticeship. You have to have a more experienced leader show you
mentoring.
How it's done. Exactly. And then after that, you have to have the opportunity to lead yourself without the mentor, you know, because if you don't jump out of the plane with your own parachute, you'll never know, right?
That's the whole thing, you know. Say, well, I don't know how. Well, get out there and learn.
You got to do it that way.
Step up in front.
Finally, and I think the thing that really separates F3 from a lot of groups is that we actively court in failure. So schooling, apprenticeship, opportunity, and failure. And failure for us is just an undesirable outcome from which your leadership foundation is strengthened.
Oh, Darren's not in here. Just told him that. I said, oh, you're going to screw up. But that's okay.
Right.
You know, if you're not screwing up, you're not moving forward.
Well, you can't really, you know, success might be by luck, and you can't scale luck. So the only way to really become a virtuous leader is to go ahead, happen an opportunity to lead, and fail. You know, I got a million failure stories that form my basis, but my success stories are boring because, you know, who cares, right?
You know what I've learned in my personal life, because I'm outspoken. I have been a leader, like I told you. I was a 4 squad leader. Second day I was in the service, he came up, would you like to be a squad leader? What does that mean? Well, I learned. Okay, I did. I see opportunity in everything. Somebody asks you a question, you just got to say, yeah, let's do this. And there again, falling on your face, right? But now, in today's world, if you're a leader and you're outspoken, people look at you like, oh, has he got a big mouth? What, look at the ego on that guy. Well, see, that's self-confidence. But it's confused in this day we live.
Well, yeah, that's what we would go to the characteristics. So what we our characteristics, the first one, which you just hit, is candor, which is graciously telling the hard truth and demanding to hear it from others. So it's not just a matter for us of being outspoken, but saying truths in a gracious way.
With love.
With love. And also the flip side of that for us is demanding to hear it. So, you know, you hear about corporate leaders in particular talking about an open door policy, and we say, yeah, that gets you about halfway. What you really need to do is walk through the open door and set a tone for the people in your organization where they are not afraid to deliver hard truths to you, you know, that they have to tell you the hard truths. And if you don't do that, if you cut the head off the person that tells you bad news, you're going to get dynamically less bad news, but you won't know. So that's why we say, you must be, as you summarize, you must be candid, right, if you're going to be a virtuous leader. And that kind of thing is a little bit punished right now, I think, in our culture.
Yeah.
Maybe in schools. I don't know. You know.
Well, it is because you're outspoken. You know, you're not. You're going outside the box. The way I see education today, Eric, we're going to dial you in here, bud. The way I see education today is you're in a box. I mean, you're in a box, and we don't want you to now he's plugged in there. We don't want you to think outside. That's what I see. I mean, that's just my personal. Mm-hmm. But in school, matter of fact, I can go back to some of my teachers. When you told me I don't have time to ask a question, I'm out. You lost me. I mean, if I can't ask questions, okay, we're done. I'm going to leave. And I basically did. Flunked geometry because of the bitch I had for a teacher, excuse me. And she told me, you don't have to dunk that. That's not a seven word. That's
it
not
is.
What. No, it's not. But anyway, we'll argue about that another time. But the point is, I lost my whole desire to learn geometry, which I won't learn because of, I'd call that poor leadership. But anyway.
Yeah, I think what Dave said about candor is so true. I think that some of the biggest issues in education right now are there's a lack of innovation, right? So the way we've done school right now is the way we've done school for years. And we are in the midst of a major pandemic where we had teachers, students, parents totally shift the way they did education during this time. And you saw some innovation happen. You saw some folks.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, change can be good.
Right. You saw some folks that you thought they wouldn't be able to do remote learning because they've been teaching for forever and they didn't know technology, but they did it and they pulled it off. But then you saw some people that you thought, oh, they're going to be able to do this well, and they stumbled through it. And so I think, though, what's happened, though, is we've now gone back to really 2019. We're not really doing school right now the way that we could. Just as you said, Ray, there's an opportunity. There's a huge opportunity.
Oh, it's bigger
right
than
now
I've ever seen.
To change.
Never
right?
seen so much opportunity in the workforce and the career opportunities that are available out there right now. And happiness and a lot of purpose if you know it exists and where to find it.
So there's an opportunity for innovation. There's an opportunity also for, especially when it comes to boys in school. My wife and I, we have two boys at home, and the way we discipline them and parent them and all of that, we're reading a lot of stuff about how the worst thing you can do for a boy is say, all right, go ahead and sit down. Just sit down and sit in your room or go to in-school suspension or do this. The best thing we can do for them is we tell our boys to go run laps. Because they got to get that energy out.
Be active.
They've got to be active, right?
Yeah.
So the kinesthetic learning part of things is super important.
As a matter of fact, two professors were on the stage at this symposium I went to Thursday, and they brought that up in the intro to their discussion. Yeah, I got to get off. I got up against the clock here. I'll tell you the story when I get back, though, because what he did was talked about the generations, all the generations from the boomers, you know, even before the boomers, on through the Generation X, Generation Z, and all that. But he did note one characteristics that one of the characteristics for then and now that's really just identifies that issue. We'll be back with more About Your House right after this. Give us a call if you want. 704-227-8800. Very interesting conversation we're having about leadership and, well, males. The gender males, men, you know, men, they still around. We need to increase their presence. We'll be right back to discuss that.
Operator, or could you help me place this call?
So we have a hashtag.
See the
now
number on the match.
We're back. All right. Due to conversation during the break, I lost my train of thought. An ADHD moment or a 70-year-old moment. I don't know which. But I hope it'll come back to me. I apologize. But I'm full of stories. But we were talking about leadership and, you know, really perpetuating leaders because of the fear factor. I was talking about outside the box and all that, but that's what we're taught in schools, you know, and Eric at Sedgefield, I'm going to ask you point blank. Can we, the industry, get into schools now? Are we allowed? Now I got a clearance from East Mecklenburg that we could go back on campus, but the mask thing is going to be a deterrent, but I'm just wondering what the environment is. Could we possibly get back on campus?
Yes, volunteers are allowed in school.
With industry. I'm talking industry. Bring some. I will talk more.
We
did it at Eastway before the pandemic and did it very successful over there.
Yeah,
but we'll
go
into that.
I'd love to talk about how we can make that happen because I do believe that effective community partnerships are really the lifeblood of what's going to – that's the opportunity for innovation that I talk about. So I actually did – a little known fact is I did my doctoral dissertation on the impact of F3 at AG.
Got
as
it.
A community, which is Pete's thing, which is Bulldogs Matter.
Yeah, exactly, right.
And so it's like, do faith-based partnerships matter in schools? Absolutely.
Yes.
But the key is you've got to really have the structures there, and for there's got to be an outcome. There's got to be specific roles for people to do. There's got to be some expectations. We can't just say, I'm going to show up. We got to say, all right, this is actually what we're doing and be as specific as possible. But we can talk about that off.
Hey, that ain't a problem. That's easy. See, all this is easy. You know, it's just a matter of industry. Industry. Mm-hmm. Once again, industry, the fragmented industry, the construction industry in Charlotte needs to come together and get in schools and change the whole ball of wax. And we can do that. Mm-hmm. And right now we have the opportunity to do so. If people will just flex and bend. It's about the kids. It's about the outcomes, you know. And here's the truth about humankind, humans, you know. Once again, we're animals. We never, whether you believe it or not, but if you really think about it, you understand one human natural God-given factor. You're never happy totally until you have and serve a purpose. It's just the way it is. It was meant to be that way, and you cannot do it just using your mind. You've got to be innovative with your hands, your body, and the whole package. That's why movement is so darn special. The older you get, the more important it becomes. There's a lot to be said for creativity and interactive behavior, and we need to create more of that. Not stand in line, be quiet, and obey. And that's what I see. Just want to throw that out there. And that restricts leadership. It stifles leadership because it's doing the same thing they've been doing for 30 frickin' years, putting fear in you, and fear is my enemy. I hate fear, deplore it, and I'm not a hater, but that's what we've got.
Well,
comment?
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. I mean, I think the fear that's instilled is by the fearfulness of those who govern us. I view that as less of a conspiracy that's been drawn up on a whiteboard, but just an incidence of incompetence, of incompetent leadership. So,
sure.
You know, F3 is structured as an I2 organization, which means individual initiative, which for us, I2 is the acting independently in the furtherance of the purpose of the organization without specific guidance. That's what we're built on. That's why we grew so fast. So that requires courage, because men are going to fail.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So you have to rely upon another man to make sure he knows the mission, teach him everything you know, and then reward him every time he acts in furtherance of the mission, regardless of the outcome. You manage the outcome. Now, the opposite of I2 is C3. That's centrally controlled collectivism, and that arises from fear. So institutions, governments, whatever they are, corporations that are governed centrally, collectively, those arise out of fear. They fear what the individual will do if he's given power and agency. So it's really a simple and clear line, and you can see it in any institution or organization. It's either going to be an I2 organization, which we say is a lizard because it's fast and has everything it needs, but it's light, or it's going to be a bullfrog, which is what we say is this big fat thing that just sits there and concentrates on existential continuity. So not to pick on CMS, I'd sued CMS not too long ago, so I'm no friend of CMS other than the fact that I have three children, or I had, my senior has graduated. And I sued him because of virtual school, because I said that you simply cannot teach people. They cannot, the CMS cannot satisfy the constitutional obligation to provide a sound basic public education. It's in our constitution, our state constitution, absent being in a classroom together. That's more important. A balancing has to be done. That's more important than staving off the pandemic. That's the way I felt. And I just wanted a tribunal, a court, to make that determination rather than unaccountable, unelected administrators who made that determination for us and foisted it upon us in a centrally controlled way. The individual initiative, I thought of principles like Mr. Belding here, are what I would rather rely upon. It's the old Tommy boy, man. I'd rather take the butcher's word for it, you know, than jam my own head up a bull's butt to see the steak. So, you know, that's kind of what we're built upon. So I'm actually kind of thrilled to hear Belding saying these things, because I at some point have to admit, through this litigation that I had with CMS on behalf of some parents of children who wanted their kids to be in school, I kind of lost faith in the idea that CMS could be reclaimed. So the last step on an organizational decline is not a bullfrog. It's actually a leech. And that's where you're a dead thing that only exists on bullfrogs that are too slow to get out of your way. And I'd gotten in my head that CMS was a leech, you know, that it could not be reinvigorated, that all we were really doing is watching something like the Postal Service decline till it finally goes away. But now, sitting with Belding, I mean, I'm kind of inspired, man. There's some men out there who still care about it.
I'm going to share this with you, okay, Dredd? People ask me all the time, how do you get into schools? Isn't it hard? No, you go find the principal. From principals down, look, I love you educators, every one of you. You principals, you teachers, you administrators, we can talk about you another day, because you're afraid. You're a bunch of afraid little people walking around up there, afraid to say anything, afraid to make a decision, afraid to make a change. How do I know this? 30 dang years. That's how I know it. I've been to your meetings. Talk, 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 talk. It's time we make a change. Yep, right here in old Charlotte. We've got the industry. We've got the money. Charlotte's a deep, deep pocket city. The money's here. And it ain't about money either. That's what I hear at the first 20 seconds of any meeting. Well, who's going to pay for it? We ain't even talked about how much it cost. But you go to the money side. It don't cost nothing to show up. Just the gas to get there. Speaking of which, I'm going to pose a question to you guys. I need help. April 2nd, we're going to have a trades career day, an opportunity for a bunch of kids to engage. hands-on activities in the electrical, the plumbing, the concrete, the heavy equipment, the utilities, the infrastructure work, all of that stuff, hands-on construction trades. Can you work to get kids there any way we can? Because it's on a Saturday. We're going to broadcast live from the location, and we're going to have an event for from all people from all over coming in here, promoting, directing, teaching, engaging kids. And now remember, anything less than 40 is a kid to me, okay? That's 40 years old. Anything less than 40, because right now we're losing corporate employees at an unprecedented rate, greater than ever before in the history of this country. Where are they going to work? They want a career that's going to give them purpose and happiness. We've really screwed things up here. This is an opportunity, big opportunity, to address the issues at hand, and on the other side, have more leadership as well. So, April 2nd, 2021, no, excuse me, 2022, my years go by too quickly. Oh, goodness. 2022, we're going to have that event from 8 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon, or even longer if we've got the crowd. And it's a time that we can really change some lives, or at least put more career opportunity pathways out in front of them to select from that otherwise they would never, ever see. And I know this for a fact because we've done it, and it's amazing the outcomes. You guys going to help?
Yeah.
I'd love to talk more about it as we move forward. We got plenty of time, and make this a very effective event, you know, for many parents as well as students of all ages, you know, and all genders, I might add, you know, because there's a lot of opportunity in the trades and manufacturing that you're not even aware of. So let's make you aware of it, bring it together, and then get into the school system. Industry's the answer there, though. I already know it. You can argue with me if you want, but, hey, go talk to somebody else. I know we have an image problem, and we have an industry problem. Industry needs to get involved, but CMS has to open the door for industry to get involved. And I know a few stories there that I'm not going to divulge. Yeah, you need to open the damn door and let industry in. In industry, you need to show up. That's all I can say about that. April 2nd. Thank you.
April 2nd or April 22nd?
April 2nd.
2nd. Okay.
And the reason being, it's a week before they break for spring break. I figure if we get some seniors out there from high schools, 2 weeks, you got to go get a job. Because all you need to do is literally show up. That's it. Pretty simple. But you got to have a purpose and a desire to learn. Because, you know, back when I grew up, all we had to do is go in the front door of a business and say, I sure would love to be an electrician. Could I get a job? Yeah, sure. When you want to start? And I worked. And I learned. Where did those days go? Do you realize how hard industry is making it for people to get a job nowadays? True story. Last week, guy about the homeless fella that I asked him, I mean, he asked me for, did I know anyone that could give him a job? And I said, I want you to get a career, not a job. So I called After Disaster, a restoration company. And he says, I said, how can he apply? Well, he's got to go online. We use a third party. Well, wait a minute. You use a third party online for people to apply to get a job. You've lost half your applicants. Lost them. Well, Ray, we just couldn't do a good job. You couldn't do a good job as a company hiring people? Back to leadership, right?
Yeah. I mean, that is a anecdotal tale of one of the major problems that we have in America right now is that we've been overcome by rules and a pedophagy of bureaucracy that's unnecessary. I mean, we license the crap out of everything. I always like to ask somebody, say a barber or a haircut, hey, what's the difference between a barber and a hairdresser? Just to hear the differences. You know, the rules. Well, to be a barber, you have to have access to a sink less than 7 feet away. that enables you to shave someone with a straight razor, whereas a hairdresser doesn't have that. I mean, it's an unbelievable intricate web of unnecessary rules that are designed to reinforce centrally controlled collectivism. Now, the reason why I think schools have become part of this is they're hostile to a tradesman because a tradesman is a free man. You know, a man with a bag of tools and the initiative to go do so, who can walk in your house, fix your plumbing and charge you for it and keep some of what he makes, that's a free man. You know, that man better off that man plugged into the matrix in a cubicle somewhere being told what to do for the entirety of his life because he won't think for himself. You keep feeding a man and he's never going to think for himself. It's that freedom that is feared by the collectivists. And, of course, that's crept into schools. And now
control, right. It's control. You're thinking outside the box. You can't do that.
Right.
We don't want that.
Well, who knows what you might think? Yeah. I think that's the thing. Who knows what you might think? So, of course, you get this. I think of school today as a fact funnel that the system jams into a man's mouth to force feed him predetermined notions, not teach him how to ask him for himself, hey, is that true or not? You know, it's the opposite of what Socrates did. You know, the Socratic method is he asks you a question, and you argue your way to the truth for yourself. And that teaches you how to think. That teaches you how to think. But breaking that is, to me, a larger iceberg than simply saying, you know, the methodologies we're using, which I think arose from the Industrial Revolution, right? I mean, that's the idea where school, the current classroom came from. So I'm kind of excited by this idea of habit and opportunity. You know, it isn't working, obviously. I mean,
what we're doing, it broke.
Right, but so we could agree.
We're off the rails, baby.
We can agree that it's not working, you know, so we can diagnose the problem in the same way. But is the solution going to be the same? Because I think the folks that control it now would say, well, the solution is for us to just have more of what we've done. We just haven't done it hard enough. You know, the fact funnel hasn't been jammed more deeply enough into your throats. Whereas I would say, no, you need to remove that.
Right.
And rethink the way you're doing this, because the way we used to do it, which is the apprenticeship, you know, you got some schooling, but that was backed up with actual hands-on. That actually worked really well.
And gave people purpose. Mm-hmm. See, I find it missing. I go to all these meetings, and I hear about workforce development, success, careers, jobs, opportunities. Where did happy go? Where did happy go? Happy's not there. People don't like their jobs. People don't want to go to work. People aren't engaged. I mean, they're not as a whole. Well, where did we go wrong? You know, I don't have a job. I have a purpose, as you do.
Yeah.
As you do. And as you do. And y'all are expressing it beyond the daily rigors of what you get paid for. You put it back into life. And that's what we collectively need to do with each other and our neighbors. Go to your neighbor. I mean, think about some neighborhoods I go into and I ask a question. How many of your neighbors do you know first names? Some people sit there and look at you like a deer in the headlights. They don't know any. And you live in this neighborhood. That's appalling. We've separated. Well, it starts before that. And we've come to this, and I don't quite. We need to spread some love, and that's what I'm saying, and that's what you are doing. How long have you been in F3, Eric, Dr. Baldwin?
I think I started about 7 years ago. I lived on the north side of town, and then moved to where I am, where I'm Chelms's neighbor here, about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So F3's become a big part of my life, and I think it's become a big part of my life because there were things in me that I felt, but I don't know if I could articulate it until I got into F3, right? Mm-hmm. And so being a part of F3, and then Chelms and I, we do a Wednesday night leadership study in our neighborhood, and we went through Q-Source, which is Dred's book, and we're going through another book right now called Tending the Fire about being a man. But it's given us an opportunity to think about, all right, what is our purpose as a man, and how does that play out with our relationships with each other? So we have deeper relationships with our neighborhood. I think we're an anomaly, you know, Chelms.
Yeah. Something on that note, you know, I wanted to write a book, Why Men Don't Hug. Why Men Don't Hug. because there somewhere along the way, men got this idea that you couldn't, like, I've got friends that I tell them I love because I truly love those guys. I mean, I do. What's wrong with saying you love somebody? Well, you're a man. You can't do that. You know, well, no, we can. And I know y'all aren't.
We're hugging, we're huggers, man.
I know. Yeah. I get it.
Right.
But you see where I'm coming from?
Well, we call those guys porcupine dancers because they're like two porcupines. Well, they want to dance together, but they're afraid to quill each other. And so if you want to be a high impact man, you got to set that aside. Once in a while, you're going to get quilled. I mean, that's just the way it goes. And if you're living in a zero defect, zero pain, zero failure world in your own mind, then you're not willing to take the risk of getting quilled once in a while.
Gotcha. That's neat. Mm-hmm.
And I think at the school level, I mean, the way that plays out for me is every time I deal with a kid, as much as I can, I say, hey, I'm proud of you. And it's amazing how many kids will say, my dad never told me he was proud of me. They'll just vomit that information up, right?
Kids are amazing, aren't they?
And be like, and then you look at them, and it's like, they're almost fighting back tears, too. And it's like, that cost me nothing, but you needed to hear that.
That's part of the reclamation of manhood right there.
Right.
We have raised a couple of generations of men who have not had the blessing of an older man, whether it's his father or not. You know, and for us, replicating that is a huge part of what we do. I mean, you see a man make what we call acceleration, the smallest movement at a greater pace, and you say, that's great. I am so proud of what you did. And you thrill that guy because he hasn't gotten it, and we have to have it. That's leadership 101.
I get it, you know. Let me ask you another question, just for men listening or, you know, even family listening and you want to pass it on. How about addiction? You deal, you know, I know you're not AA or, you know, whatever, but I see you as a resource for people who don't possibly go that direction. Is that
a possibility? Yeah, so the addiction that we are a remedy for is what we call SADCON syndrome, and that's being sad on the inside, joyless, and being happy, fake happy on the outside because you think the world demands it from you. So we are structured very closely to AA in that sense. Is step one is you have got to admit that you're a SADCON.
You own it.
You got to admit it.
You got to own it.
And you got to admit that you're powerless to fight it off without something, some higher power coming in and doing it. And then you can walk right down the steps to the point where you live it fiercely out and you bring other men in. It's a form of discipleship. So, yeah, I mean, we have a tremendous number of recovering alcoholics in F3, and I think why they're attracted to it is it because it's a place where they can continue on their purpose of helping other men to recover from whatever addiction ails them. So we call that the jester, whatever temptation of the flesh that causes you to decelerate. For each man's different, porn, drugs, alcohol, whatever, schadenfreude, doesn't matter, whatever sin that's governs you, part of what we do is help you throw that off so that you can run the race set out for you.
Gotcha. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back on the other side. More discussion. Men, we need you to step up and become just that, a man. Yeah, sounds weird, don't it? We'll talk more about it when we get back. We got Chelms, we got Dredd, and Dr. Belding. Those are those F3 names, and you can figure out the rest. You know, in the past 30 years, due to culture, education, I don't know how it came from. We could probably talk a little bit about how it started, but We become demasculated. Is that a good word?
Yeah.
Demasculated as men. If you don't know who Jordan Peterson is, Dr. Jordan Peterson, he's a clinical psychologist from the University of Toronto in Canada, very popular with men. His biggest audience is men. And if you listen to him, you'll understand why. And I've listened to him for hours, and F3 stands on some of his what his findings are and how we become demasculate. Say the word.
Well, we would probably say emasculated.
Emasculated.
But I like demasculated, too. I mean, we make up words all the time, so that's good.
You're creative. But dwell on that. I mean, come up with, because that's one of the reasons F3 exists, is to put the male back into the man, or the man back into the male.
It probably is the central reason we exist, is to return men's manhood to them. So, you know, if you look at a man who was out on the frontier, say in the late 19th century, 1870, whatever.
Yeehaw!
he knew what he was supposed to do. I mean, he had a farm. He had to put meat on the table, and he had to protect his wife and family from the Indians. I mean, it was pretty clear what he had to do, and he could do that better by bonding to the guy on the next farm. Like, getting in a fight with the guy on the next farm over something petty, that puts your life and your family's life at risk, right? You had to lock shields to survive. So I always look at those kind of times where men are confronted with an existential threat, right? A threat to their very existence, as times where it's very clear what we as men do, what we're supposed to do. We were given testosterone, loud voices, bigger shoulders, you know, for a reason. You know, that was to provide physical protection and to work hard. And I don't think there was any question of what men had to do then. Now, you fast forward 150 years, we don't have existential threat. Most people don't work in the food production industry. You know, we work in offices. You know, we're not really, although we claim to be afraid of physical violence, we're not really afraid, or we wouldn't be walking around, you know, so vulnerably. So what is it that a man is supposed to do now exactly? What is his adventure he's supposed to live? What is the beauty he is supposed to rescue, right? Exactly what does he exist to do? And all that's combined with men being very confused, and then put on top of that, our prevailing culture has decided suddenly to demonize masculinity and attach a bunch of modifiers to it, like toxic, right? So by very virtue of having a penis makes you suspect and evil, and you're demonized. So I'm not really surprised that a bunch of men are surrendering to that. And saying, well, look, if the culture views me with great suspicion, and B, I don't know what I'm supposed to do anyway, I guess I'll just play video games and hang out and get fat. And through that, they become emasculated.
They are.
Yeah.
I told a story a little earlier about a man standing in line behind me. said, I wouldn't recommend the traits to my kids. And I says, well, why not? He says, because of insurance. I'm sorry, what? And I thought to myself, if you lose 150 pounds, you wouldn't have to worry so much about insurance.
That's right. I mean,
and, you know, you're not healthy. But I didn't say that because it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be.
Well, we can't like say going those back things.
To, going right. back to that way of delivery.
Well, look how fast things have changed. You know, I was in sixth grade in 1977 or something, 1976, ironically, 200 years after the Declaration of Independence. And I took that day, 11 or 12 years old, in homeroom to decide not to stand up and say this Pledge of Allegiance, just because I'm a rebellious person. It wasn't like I had any formed, you know,
opinions.
No,
right?
I just didn't do it.
You just didn't want to do it because you're supposed to.
Because I'm supposed to. Teacher said do it. I said no. Teacher sends me, doesn't say a word, just sends me to the principal. Principal says, you didn't stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance? And this is Connecticut. This isn't South Carolina. And I said, I didn't want to stand. He dials my father's phone, or my father on the gas station, dials my father on the phone, says, your son won't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. My father drives up there, walks in the door, looks at me, says, is that true? I said, yeah. He says, come outside with me. We walk outside in front of the school, looks up at the flag, and says, you see those red stripes up there? He said, you know why that's on there? I said, no. He said, that's because men died and shed their blood to put them up there so you could act like a jackass and sit there in that classroom and not stand up. He said, you can do whatever you want when you're 18, but as long as you're living in my house, as long as you're doing that, you're going to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, and that's just the way it is. I never not stood for the Pledge of Allegiance again. I just started crying. I started thinking about all those men who died and
what that flag means.
Right. So, teacher, principal, father, maybe about 7 minutes, in this 10,000 person town I lived in, maybe about 7 minutes. And I'm guessing that's not how it would happen today. I'm just guessing. I'm not really challenging Belding there, but I'm just guessing the teacher wouldn't just send you to the principal's office. Principal wouldn't just call your dad. Your dad wouldn't come in there and drag you out front, show you the flag, and explain in very simple and stark terms. And remember, I'm talking about Connecticut. Very simple and stark terms.
No, but you're talking about your father.
Talking about father, right.
Your father.
That's the way men used to be. That's the way we used to be.
I call it tough love. I've been called names by my family members because I made rules and boundaries, and those were the boundaries. Well, why do you have to be such an ass many times? And it goes a little deeper than that, but we'll leave it at that because I can say that word. To this day, but later on, I can honestly say that I've had people in my life that would have considered me that way then come back to me and say, thank you for being hard, for being honest, because see, that's something that, like we're talking about,
right.
Men are afraid to do because they're afraid they're going to offend somebody, because everybody gets offended easy. And that's part of what we're discussing right now, right here, right now. You know, now you husbands and wives, y'all need to sit down and communicate better as well and be on the same page. Don't argue about principles in front of your kids. Agree with a set of boundaries. That's just me talking.
Right. Well, I think that, and Belding alluded to this before, we suffer from a lot of disconnection from our founding principles. So, you know, if somebody asked me what's essential in my beliefs with respect to governance, it wouldn't be a Republican, Democrat, anything like that. It would be simply this, that we hold certain truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. And because of that, we have inalienable rights to pursue the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. That's the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. It's pretty close to exactly what it says. Now, those are very simple things. And we can be united in this country of ours and believe on a lot of different things, but we have to have full agreement, unity, full agreement on those simple things, and they're just this. We have a creator. We are all equal. Your characteristics, immutable characteristics, race, creed, all that stuff does not matter. We are all equal. And because we are all equal, no worldly principality, no tyrant can remove from us our inalienable rights to our own life, our own liberty, and you said this before, Ray, our own decisions how to pursue happiness. It's that basic. And if we don't start there, then none of the other stuff matters at all. It's kind of like Christianity. You can argue about that. If you don't believe the tomb was empty when the rock got rolled by, the rest of the miracles seem crazy to you. But if you can accept the resurrection, then you know you can accept the fact the world was created in 6 days. You know, that's just easy. If you can accept the fact that we're all created equal and it's your life, no government gave it to you. It's your liberty. No government can infringe upon it. And you can pursue happiness any way you want as long as it doesn't infringe on someone else. Then all the rest of this stuff is just adiaphora. It's just not essentials that we don't have to argue about. We can if we want, but we can come together under the flag, like my father said, the red stripes for blood. It's that simple. And it's so I think it's the complexity of these messages that get delivered to these kids. I'm not a smart man. I have to have it broken down into simple terms by smarter men like the founders who understood it and just lay it out so that I can repeat it consistently. And if we can get back to that, then we don't really have to worry about whether or not a particular school is not allowing carpenters to come in and apprentice people. It'll flow, right?
It's called love.
Yeah.
I say it all the time. Let's just spread the love. You know, now if I got to say, and, you know, in those conversations, when I say we can come in here, well, what if? Oh, man. Anytime I get a what if, you're just throwing the red fear flag up. Don't what if me. I don't do what ifs. I'm not might or not maybe in today's world, but you got to think about, no, you don't. Only if you choose to. I choose not to. Am I a rebel? Oh, hell yes. I don't play by all the rules. Not supposed to. Rules are there to confuse us, and they're doing a good job. I'm sick of them. I'm all about humanity and wellness and living life to the best we can be and be happy with purpose. And on that note, thank you for what you said. Dredd and Chelms, Dr. Belding, will be back next hour with more Man Dog. Gotta love it. And I want to bring up testosterone, all you guys out there. Yep, testosterone. We're going to talk about that. I got four men here. No, actually six men all over the age of 30, and probably all of them, except for me, are low on testosterone. I don't know about Dredd next to me, but we'll discuss it. What the hell? We got nothing better to do. Come on back. We'll talk.
Mondo. Am I the only one not brainwashed? Making my way through the land of the lost, who sees it as it is and worries about his kids as they try to undo all the things he...
Welcome back. Great, great song there. My guest today, or these hours, last 2 hours of the show, have been F3. Not all of them, because it's a collective. It's a group of men that focus on leadership and faith and community and developing more, well, more leaders, more men with male views. How's that? Not that we can make a man woman views, but you get my point, you know, I hope. But got Dredd, their names in F3, all the men get coined a name, as I will be coined a name here by the end of the program by Dredd himself. Because if he didn't like your name, he said he'll change it. I love his attitude. I do. But I got Dredd, Dr. Belding, or as Dredd calls him, Belding. You know, now tell, Eric, tell me Belding. Now, I'm not a big TV nut, okay?
Yeah.
And Dr. Belding is a character on a TV show.
That's right. So the show Saved by the Bell.
Right.
Which was kind of a stalwart for a lot of people in my generation. A TV show. The principal on that show was Mr. Belding. And so I was Mr. Belding originally, and then I got my doctorate, and they changed it to Dr. Belding. And so, but I think anybody who works in education, just as Dredd said earlier, they get Belding. So we have, what, seven Beldings that are floating around.
So people that work in education. Well, I'm tickled you got educated. And I was really elated. Happy boy,
right,
that you came today. As far as, well, not only one, you're Sedgefield's vice principal. First time I got paddled in school was at Sedgefield by Mr. Cockrum.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Cockrum is the uncle to a guy I worked with yesterday morning. It's weird. Huh. Rex Cockrum, good friend, customer, listener, all that stuff. You know, but we worked together yesterday. Now, it was his uncle that whooped my butt first time in school. He could yield it.
And I think corporal punishment, maybe Dredd could look into this for us. I think corporal punishment is still on the books in North Carolina. I have not had the courage to use it yet, but it may still be on. I think it's actually
illegal.
I think it's legal, actually.
Legal.
I think it may be.
It should be. Because, you know,
I'm not going to go down that road.
Stay off that one. That's my advice to you as your
well,
attorney.
You know, I tell you what, the story, we skipped lunch one day and went to the little convenience store market. It's gone. That whole sec. You know, you go down the hill and you got the food line down there and all that stuff. Okay, we went and did lunch down there and came. I got me a honey bun that day. Well, we came back. We were on time, you know, but, oh, no, we get somebody walks in the classroom. Ray's got to go to the principal's office. Oh, Lord. We got caught. So I went and got my well-deserved punishment, I guess. I was guilty, you know. It didn't hurt me, you know. And my dad, talking about corporal punishment, I grew up in a time where the belt was used. Yes, sir. My dad was good. He could pick me up with his by my left ear, left hand, left ear, pick me up, take his belt off, and use it. Oh, he's a big guy. And boy, and people say, oh, that's horrible. No, it wasn't. I was on the receiving end. But my father, I love him. He was hard. He was a disciplinarian. But he wasn't. He didn't do anything that he didn't tell me beforehand not to do or whatever. That's fair, is it not? I mean, you know. So, I mean, if you go against the grain, just like your father telling you about that flag, and my father was a veteran in World War II. He served in the Seabees. You know, so I come from old school values. And what I'm talking about here now is old school values, because to you, Eric, how old are you, by the way?
40.
40. See? Now, see,
April
you're...
April 2nd.
Huh?
April
2nd. Oh, cool. Cool, April Fool's Day.
That's not my... I don't know what Chums is saying. All right.
I got you. But, you know, so nowadays, that stuff frowned upon. Oh, I can't believe. Matter of fact, in conversation, you have that conversation with people. They look at you. You have that? Well, yeah. Made me a better man. I mean, that's just me talking. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about corporal punishment. I do believe that hard looks and straight talk get results, and that's what a good leader is willing to do with love.
I don't. Hey, look, I'm not all for corporal punishment anymore. I think what you just said can be just as effective, done with love and care and compassion.
Done with love.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know.
Well, and I think the way it looks now is.
I'm not saying that we all should grab the belt and go out and whoop our kids. That's not I'm saying.
That is,
some people hear me that right. way, though.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to be clear. I'm not a supporter of corporal punishment in schools, for sure. But I do think the way it looks now is kids know that you love them, right? You can't fake that. You can't fake love. Yeah. You can't fake anything with kids.
You can't fake love, period.
Right, period, right. And so it's that straight talk is – having those conversations with kids and saying, all right, you knew you were out of line, and you know I'm going to treat you fairly. And they say, okay, I got you. Right? I mean, that's kind of how it looks now, I think.
What Dredd said about going back down to ground level, that's where I always take it. It's called grounding, right? It's just that simple. There's right and there's wrong. Now, that right and wrong has become somewhat unclear to some people. And that is really problematic in my way of thinking. We've got to question right and wrong anymore. That is very concerning.
The existence of right or wrong, I think, is one level actually back, whether or not there is any right, you know,
right.
Capital R right. So you take you're a construction guy, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, if you're going to put up a structure, you need to start with footings.
Most important part of any structure
is
the foundation.
Footings go in first, because you have to have sufficient bearing pressure to support the rest of the structure. Footings, then foundation, and then you can put the structure on it. Now, if the footings are rotten, or the soil upon which they are is not solid, that thing is not going to stand. And so we have lost our capacity to provide the footings for our children, those basic things. Clear, basic, simple things upon which the rest of the structure stands. And if you start with the idea that there is no right or wrong, think about what we tell people that. Well, everybody has their own truth. You know, it's your experiences in life that really matter more than these truths that have been existed forever. If you tell them that, well, then what do they put their house on? What do they construct their house on?
Where's their foundation?
Where's their foundation? Of course, they're adrift. You know, it's almost like, not to stretch the analogy too far, but it's almost like we're putting helical piers now in. We're trying to take a house that's
exactly.
Just, you know, we're coming in
we're
after
doing
the fact.
After the fact.
After
exactly.
the fact. And, you know, that's...
Should have done that up front.
But it's not too, okay, we got to put some helical piers on these houses we already built because we didn't do it right. But the new houses, you know, the new house. Well, we can certainly lay the footings down correctly for those.
Yes.
But we have to start now.
Right. As you're educating, you're in education. Now, here's the big question. What is the law? And we just talked about a tremendous problem in schools today. The lack of male role models and image itself, the male image. You told me a story during the break that kind of, man, just tells a story, you know, that men aren't playing our roles, mm-hmm. and it's you're seeing it big
yeah
time.
so the couple years ago, every year I try to do this event called March Dadness, right, where we invite
March Dadness,
right?
So got it,
play on words.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So I tell the boys, it's just for the male students at the school. You come to the school and you bring your dad, your uncle, or a significant male adult to the school with you. Chelms has done a great job coming to that. He's also a lunch buddy. That's a small plug.
Well, he hadn't talked yet either. We're going to get
we'll
this
give him
guy
an
talking
opportunity
in
to say,
a minute.
Yeah. But the whole goal is you come, you bring a significant male adult, you bond with them. We feed them pizza, or something a little more healthy. We have a guest speaker. We do basketball. We do things like that, right?
Sure.
And you're bonding with that significant male adult, and we're talking about manhood-type things in that programming, right? Well, I'm planning for this event, and there was an adult that came to me and said, well, hey, what about this kid? He doesn't have a dad at home, or he's got two moms. I said, okay, well, let's just stop there for a second because we're missing the point here, right? Like, that's okay even that he has two moms. I'm not even going to speak to that. Like, we want him to bring a significant male adult because I believe that a significant male adult matters for every single boy at that school. And so if they don't have a significant male adult, that's okay. We're not going to punish them. We've got male adults. We got guys like Jones. We got teachers that want to be a part of it. You got me. I'll go ahead and do it, right? Whoever it is, because that's what matters. So going back to that absolute truth, like, we're not going to say anything about what you got going on at home. We just know that the truth is a significant male adult matters in the holistic development of a male child.
Yep, it does, and it's lacking. Mm-hmm. One of the largest problems in our culture today is that then we get it into the leadership, because isn't that what the men did, is somewhat the leadership role in the family. That's just history.
Yeah.
I mean, up until the late 50s, moving into the 70s, it went away, and it has gone away, along with a lot of other things, and that's what we're addressing today with F3. You're addressing every day, every week, through your initiative of, you know, F3 in itself. So, now, Chelms.
My job was done when I got these two gentlemen here this morning.
No. Your job. What's your take on all this? I mean, you're involved, you're, and I've seen you. Bulldogs Matter. Talk about that a little bit. Where did that come? I mean, so what are you doing?
This is how I really got involved. The first time that I had a structured leadership instruction was from Dredd, or maybe OBT, at AG Middle School back in 2011. And they did the Q Source. What did we call it back then? Q School?
Q School, yeah.
Q School. So that was the first time. So then I got involved at Billingsville. I don't know who started it. One of the F3 guys. We started tutoring. And then 2 years later, somebody came to me and said, hey, we're going to start a Bulldogs Matter. We're going to start a program, which is a combination between Crossroads and the school to allow the kids to stay in school afterwards so they don't have to go home because there's probably not a parent there. I think 70% of the kids only have a single parent in the home. And so I said, great, because I wanted to get – again, earlier I said this, I have a passion for help, you know, being involved in middle school kids and that teenage kids. And so a group of guys started there. We go once a week when the school's in session. So COVID was a problem, and that's an obstacle that I have not overcome yet. And that's reason I reached out to you, and I rely on these guys because I think more men, not just industry, you mentioned industry. I think more men need to be involved in the programs like Dr. Belding is doing at Sedgefield in any school. That we need to have men because there are so many kids that don't have that positive male role model that'll speak candor to them, that'll hold them accountable, that'll challenge them, that'll let them do things that they'll fail. I mean, we created cornhole boards in the hallway at AG Middle School, and the kids had never done that. You saw the video. So that kind of thing is what I want to just really invigorate, accelerate.
You know, something that I think would be really neat, and if you really just, you know, old lawnmowers, people throw them in the dumpster all the time, right?
Yeah.
Old lawnmowers, pull lawnmowers. But is to get two lawnmowers, three lawnmowers, old ones, you know, and some mechanics tools, socket wrenches, all that stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and have a session to where they tear a lawnmower apart. I mean, that sounds crazy, I realize. But, see, I tore a lawnmower apart, my first lawnmower, when I was 12 years old.
Dr. Belding had the simplest one for younger kids. I walked over, and he had a piece of wood and nails.
Oh,
and
yeah. Well, that's
the youngest kid was just nailing, just a hammer and nails.
Any kind of interaction, like, or take a bicycle.
Right.
And tell them to take the wheels off and put the chain back on and all this.
Right.
You know, those simple things, but they never get an opportunity to do that.
Right.
Otherwise.
Right.
You know, and hammering nails, screwing, taking a screw gun, putting screws in. We do those things at these trades career days with the kids to let them get engaged. You know, and we need to do that in the schools if teachers can. But there again, teachers are mandated to do this and do that, and they're busy. They're so busy doing what they're required to do, and I think that's somewhat on purpose, is they can't think outside the box. Here we go again. I call it corporate government-run education, and it sucks. But that's what we got. Like it or not, it's just the way it is. We got a caller, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. I'm against the clock here. So we're going to take a little break here. We'll come back with more F3 and a caller with a question or discussion, and we will get to that when we get back. Give us a call, 704-227-8800, or Fox Sports Charlotte. Stream us live. Download the free app, 94.7 FM. We'll be right back.
I could stay with you for a while, maybe longer if I do. Don't you think time is right for us to find all the things we thought weren't proper could be right in time, and can you see?
Folks, good to be here. 704-227-8800. I have the F3 men's group here, well, representation of, and Dredd, Dr. Belding, and Chelms. That is their F3 names. And I've got a caller. Uncle Red's on the phone, as a matter of fact. Let's pull Uncle Red up. Good morning, Uncle Red. How in the world are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm riding around over here in the edge of Rowan County, lost, but there's nothing new about that. What I wanted, I've been listening to you gentlemen, and I just wanted to stick one thing in there. I was married to a school teacher that had a master's in early childhood development, and I mean, people fought to get their kids in her class. She was a full-blown school teacher, and she used to preach all the time that from the time they're born till the time they're about 5 years old, they develop all their social skills. And the problem is school teachers don't get them. And I'd be curious what your guy says. School teachers don't get them but about a third of the day, 5 days a week. The rest of the time they're at home with whoever or whomever. I know there's good people at home, and then there's bad people at home. But if they're forming all their social skills from zero, she was a proponent of like 4 years kindergarten or something. The quicker you get them away from the house, the quicker you can get them, teach them how to learn and cope. Because you got to remember, little kids are like walking in and buying a brand new computer. Nothing in the RAM and nothing in the hard drive. And they just soak up like a sponge. They soak up everything they see. And from the time they're about two, they remember it. People think, well, we're fighting, but nobody's going to remember it. They know everything you do. And then it comes back and backlashes. By the time they're five or six, you have got a battle to try to straighten them out when you only have them for about 8 hours a day. Now, there's people that believe that. There's people that probably don't believe that. I lived with somebody for 30 years that taught people, and I know, and she knew. She was a state president of a sorority that was nothing but teachers. I mean, she knew what she was talking about, and people came to her to talk to about to, you know, about stuff like that. But it's a battle. I mean, people at home have no idea what a battle it is. I think after this COVID deal, I think maybe they do a little bit, because when they all got stuck at home with their kids, they realized just how much the damn teachers were doing. I mean, aside from being giving them some freedom, the teachers are working for their money. And I'm not saying that because I was married to one. I'm just telling you because it's the darn truth. But you can't act like an idiot. You can't act like an idiot and then send your kid off and wonder why they mess up when everything they see for two-thirds of the day is you acting like an idiot. So this is a little food for thought. And then I'll hang up, and then I got to go back and put you on live streaming so I can listen to you. But you gentlemen have a good day in your own track, and I appreciate what you're saying. I'll see you later.
Thank you. Take care. Drive careful out there. All right, and, well, you know, schools have become a disciplinary factor in kids' lives that shouldn't be there. And what that boils down to is we've screwed up. Family dysfunctionality has become a serious issue in education as well. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Belding?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big topic, and I think that what happens in the family and how that spills into schools, and so much of really my work, honestly, is working with families and building trust and saying, all right, this is what's going on. How can we help? How can we problem solve? Let's get you connected to the right resources, all of those things. I mean, it is huge. And so I think it's inappropriate for us to think that the schools are going to solve all these societal problems, right? And so there's so much there, and there's so many nuances to it. So, but
you know, I get into a work ethic. You know, a work ethic is a value, right? You do the right thing. You know, you show up, you're on time. You know, you address people correctly. I mean, a work ethic. Where are the values? Right, wrong. You know, all these things we've talked about today, and that's what we're addressing. How do we get more on an even keel? Well, one, how do we teach work ethic if we're not teaching kids how to work? I mean, and that's getting right back to put tools in schools. And I'm not talking about hammers and screwdrivers necessarily. I'm talking about art, paintbrushes. I'm talking about band, musical instruments. All these things are tools. Tools of a society and humanity or humankind, humanity itself. These are tools for humanity and development and happiness and purpose. And we need to get back to more of that and get out of the damn books and the academia part of it. And now I'm not saying, but if you put academia with purpose and direction, then you really got something, because then you see the reasons. Like, why do we do math? Go build a building, you'll see. So all you got to do is build a building. Math becomes really in focus. And you can actually, what I say, I've got this my favorite expression on anybody that's passionate. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? If you ain't feeling it, you ain't there. What do you mean? Well, you're not feeling it, are you? So, I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you got to feel it, and you got to believe it. And we've got to instill more of that belief and eliminate the fear. And that's what y'all are doing. And I believe, anyway, that's what you're set out to do, is put more courage, even that quality, courage. Where is that going? Mm-hmm. Where is courageous? Isn't that in leadership?
That's one of our virtues, courage, which we define as setting aside fear to turn hardship into grace. So courage isn't
the... Repeat that. What did you just say?
Courage is setting aside fear to put hardship, to turn hardship into grace. Setting aside fear to turn hardship into grace. So we don't say hardship is the absence of fear because only a sociopath has that. We say it's the acknowledgement of fear that a man says, I'm afraid, and that's in my heart to keep me from getting eaten by a lion. But if I let that fear overcome me and I don't control it in a masculine way, then I put everyone around me at risk. That's why men don't run from the battlefield. They're afraid. I mean, you get shot at, you're afraid. But you suppress that fear and you learn to control it so that you can protect the people that you're fighting for. So courage works the same way now. I mean, Belding's obviously a courageous man because he's saying things that don't sound completely consistent with what the general governance of CMS is probably saying, but he's doing it courageously. So courage isn't always courage in battle. It doesn't mean you stand up to a guy, you know, robbing your house necessarily, though you probably would. What it means is saying things that put or doing things that put something you value at risk. So I hear that word being misused a lot. They say, oh, you're courageous. Well, the dude just said what everybody else is already saying, right? But if you don't put your life, limb, liberty, or wealth, or reputation at risk, if you don't expose yourself to negative things, that's not really courage at all. That, to me, is yard sign activism, because it's pretty easy to put up a yard sign that says, you know, I believe in this, I love this, or whatever, drive slow in my neighborhood. You know, that's not courage. Courage is the exact opposite.
That gets right back to one of my favorite sayings. You know, actions speak louder than words. And there's something that, you know, has gone by the wayside. You tell me anything, go to meetings, talk. Actions speak louder than words. And that's why we collectively as a community need to come together, create more action. You know, how many kids are in CMS? 57,000, something like that?
140,000.
140,000. Thank you for knowing that.
It's gone down by about 3,000 this past year.
Yeah, I was looking for those numbers. I had them 2 years ago. But anyway, so how many again?
140,000.
There's 140,000 students in CMS, and that doesn't include all the private schools and private learning institutions around town either. That's CMS's enrollment. That's 140,000 kids who are the future of this country, or part of it. They're inclusive in it. And what are we going to do to change what's going on, or help it, or create a paradigm shift?
Mm-hmm.
That's where industry needs to get involved as well. We've got a lot of, there's a lot of good leaders out there. They just need to come to the front. Now, I went to a symposium, and I got to bring this up, Thursday. And I was told there was going to be 170 people there, hopefully. There wasn't. There was maybe half that. I want to know why in the world people don't have any more time than they've got now to make a change, to make a difference, to show up. The room should have been filled with industry people. When is that going to happen? I don't have the time. Make time. We've got to make a difference. We have to. Not for us. Certainly not for me. I don't have a dog in the fight anymore. You know. Except I do have a grandbaby that's going to be here in 2 weeks. That's a new experience. Looking forward to that. I can really make a difference. I got 10, 15 years left in me. That's my goal. But I also want to spread the love. And that's key. excuse me. What are the events and what are y'all doing currently? What does a man or anyone need to do to become, bless you there, my son, become involved with F3?
Show up.
Show up. Go to the website. There's a schedule of locations, times. There's no invite required. You don't have to know anybody there. You just show up and say, I'm a friendly new guy, FNG. And the guys will take you in and bring you down the road that we've been down.
And that's f3nation.com?
Yes.
F3Nation.com. I'm on it right now.
As Dredd said, 48 states and several countries. So you don't have to be in Charlotte to participate.
And for all that have addiction issues, and right now in this country, addiction is probably as grand, it's just out of control. And because we're all looking for answers and we're confused, and it's mass, to me, yeah, you might have heard this, to me it's mass psychosis, all induced. And we need to break away from it, and it's fear. And we need to look for solutions, and I think we have one in F3 for men out there. Now I'm going to bring up the testosterone issue. Okay.
Yes.
Why do this? Okay. Testosterone is a male hormone, obviously, but women need it as well. I have to make that designation. I'm not a doctor, but I know what the hell I'm talking about because I've talked to doctors and doctors who care. Western medicines is about as bad as CMS. Oh, God, was that a statement? Horrible. Well, I said it. I ain't sorry I said it. But Dredd's over here rubbing his face. Oh, no. It depends on who you talk to. Actually, who do you believe? What do you believe? And, Matt, my gosh, has it ever been any worse than it is right now? Who do you believe? What do you believe? Oh, law. Okay, use your brains. Use your intelligence, okay? Fact is, due to environmental stresses, meaning what you eat, what you expose your body to chemically, environmental stresses, and most of all, work stress. Stress related to everyday life depletes your testosterone. All of the above probably puts all males above 30, or let me say most males above 30, low on testosterone. What does that do to you? Well, it demasculates you to some degree. The doctor told me you'll become a man again. I didn't know what he meant. I thought I was a man. Well, you're more man than most men, whatever that meant. But anyway, long story short, 2.5 years ago, I started taking testosterone. As a 67-year-old male who is now going to be 70 in January, did it make a difference? Oh, hell yes. How many ways? Many ways. Mostly mental clarity, less brain fog, more energy, and more sex drive. And folks, sex should be continuing on till you die. It's meant to be that way in nature. You know, look at it. It's always been that way. It always will be that way. And we need to become aware of it. As men, go get your testosterone checked and do something about it for your own benefit. And it's a fact. All these ED commercials on radio, TV, you see them and you hear them all the time. That really intrigued me. Why do we hear so much about that? Well, then I started doing research. And it's a fact. Address it. And I can have, I've had several guests on the show here that have been on a testosterone therapy regimen, and it's been very effective for them. Now, women's hormones. Hormones are very important to our health and wellness. That's why I bring it up. Health is wealth. Do everything you can to stay healthy, and you won't see a doctor as much. You don't need a doctor as much. And you will be happier and more purpose-filled in your life. It's called balance, folks. Balance. Slow down and pay attention to your health, wellness, and you are what you eat, by the way. I talked to a gentleman sitting beside me at this symposium the other day. He went out and got him a Reese cup twice, came back, and he says, could I get you one? I says, no, homie, don't do that. I don't do sugar. Nope, no sugar. My nemesis, beer. Just being honest. But I love me some beer.
It's good for you.
Yeah, in moderation. Problem is that word, moderation. Yep. What the hell is that? Anyway, but back to hormones. I'm saying this because the balance of your hormones give you a greater sense of wellness. There's more balance to it. So you can take that for what it's worth. And you guys, I bring it up because how old are you?
56.
There you go. You're pushing 60, 50, about 58. And you're 40.
40.
Yeah, you're a puppy. But that's okay. And speaking of the youth, something I've really done, and I want to ask you this, the age group, y'all, of F3, what is it? Is it all-encompassing?
It's probably 13 to 85.
13 years old?
Maybe a little. 13, 14. Yeah,
oh, so it's all-encompassing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All men. F3 is open to all men.
All men. And there isn't a more so than not so as far as the age of participants?
The mean or the mode is 43.
Okay, gotcha.
It's the most common age.
43.
That's when a man generally, he still has some of his youth, but now he's kind of entering early middle age. He's likely to have risen to some sort of leadership position where he works. He's walking into the break room and realizing that everybody's whispering about him. His father has started to decline, so he can't really go to him anymore for advice. In fact, his father is starting to lean on him, and he's confronted with the fact that he doesn't know how to lead. And the rest of his life, he's wondering what that's going to look like. And that's why we get so many 43-year-old men at F3, and we noticed it very early on in what we call the circle of trust, which is how we end every workout. One of the things we do is go around the circle, and every man says his age. And we're sitting there, 43, 43, 43, 43. There's so many guys that are 43. So I would say that, yeah, it might not be the average age, but it's the mode. It's the most common number.
I have a thing about 42. 40 is when you get it all the way out. You understand what I mean? Grab your ears. Pull hard. Get it out. Pulling your head out your butt. You know, and I think 40 is that age to where most men, like you say, scratch your head for sure and say, now what? Kind of, you know, I've gotten here, I know what I'm doing, but where am I going with it? Or, you know, trying to work out the rest of the direction.
Right.
And I think, and that's great to hear. 43.
Well, it's just an observation that we made. So we incorporated that into our concept of leadership. We say, we don't really know what we're doing. We're just building the road ahead, 43 feet ahead of the men who need to drive on it. So for us, the concept of 43 has a lot of resonance.
Right. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. That's neat. I'm glad I asked the question because the age, I ask everybody's age when I see, and people say, that's rude. I don't care.
Well, we care quite a bit. And one of the other things we do with the age is if you're below 40, when you say your age, everybody yells hate. If you are over 50, everybody yells respect.
Yeah, and that's something that's gone away, too, is elderly respect.
Well, yeah, of course it's gone away because it's if the eternal truths, the keepers of the eternal truths, are going to be the older men in the group, if you destroy the eternal truths, you got to destroy the value of the men who keep them. So if you're over 50, you're respect. If you're over 60, you're double respect. And we love it when a guy in his 60s or 70s is coming out and he's in great shape because if you're 40 and you look at a man who's 65 – who's running out in front of you, you're like, wow.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
I need to catch up with that guy.
Right, yeah.
You know, by the same token, if you're 65 and you're sitting around in your house on your Barca lounge or doing the YATF.
I'm old.
You know,
talking to you, Jeff.
If you want to be fast and stay young, we say run with younger, faster men. And that's the best way to do it.
Right.
That's why Chelms works out with
the
group in our neighborhood.
Well, there's not a one of these men here with me that are overweight, by the way. They're all healthy and pretty fit, and I commend you on that. Because, like I said, fat is over. It's just gone crazy. We're epidemics, man. You talking about a pandemic? Fat. There you go. We'll be right back.
Take you on a moonlight ride. him for me. But let me get to the point. Let's roll another joint. Turn the radio loud. I'm too alone to be proud. And you don't know.
Hacksaw's got something he wants to say. His name's Hacksaw.
I see that.
Yeah. And... Thank you. And, you know, one thing that I've – look, you guys were talking about in the last segment about, you know, there is a generation issue of – a lot of us don't want to listen to the
elders.
That's
what I was going to talk about now, the generation personalities and forgot, but carry on.
Yeah, and it, my problem is I feel like a lot of us that are younger, millennials, if you want to call us that – we don't feel that the older generation wants to talk to us, and I feel like the older generation doesn't think we want to talk to them, but we do. I mean, I've been working with Ray for about 6 years now, and I think it's the best kind of partnership because I listen to him, he listens to me, I yell at him, he yells at me. That's the whole point, but I don't understand why we don't see more of that.
Well, you hit F3 101, so... we have what we call the concentrica, which is the arrangement of relationships. So Oprah would say work-life balance, and we would say you can't balance things that are dynamic. You can only balance things that are static. It doesn't work. So instead of looking at it as a scale, we look at it as a target, like an archery target, the center of which is the most important relationship, and that's with your wife. Most of your time and energy, like most of the arrows in your quiver, should be focused on that. If your relationship with your wife is not accelerating, the rest won't prosper. Second is your children, what we call shorties. That's the sacrificial relationship. You'll give up everything for them. Third is the what we call a shield lock. That's the horizontal relationship. That's with men in the same place in life. But fourth, and this is what you're getting at, Saw, is what we call the whetstone. And that's the vertical relationship between men. So that's generally going to be an older man who acts as the stone for the blade of the younger man. And that's critically important. So I myself have 13 blades that I meet with periodically to help them sharpen. The last relationship is what we call mammon, that's work. That should be the least amount of your time goes into that. So to address the exact concern that you just expressed, we're deliberate about it because if you're not deliberate about it, nothing's going to happen. Whatever's, mm-hmm. if whatever goes uninspected goes neglected, right? So we encourage the men in our groups to conduct whetstone relationships with younger men in their lives and to make it their business to see those men accelerate. Now that I'm an older guy, when I was younger, I felt exactly like you. I said, why don't these old guys, why don't they care about us, right? Now that I'm an old guy, I realize it's the weeds in life that grow up to choke you out. I mean, you have all the great desires in the world, and you're 55, and you're like, I should be doing these things, but you're so distracted by the anxieties of life and the chase for money that you just don't do it, right? Unless you reorder your life. So we specifically and deliberately take that, those anxieties and the chase for money, because we have to have money that sustains us, right? We put that on the outer ring. It's less important than your relationship with younger men. And if you deliberately do it that way and you look at the years and energy of your life as arrows in the quiver, and that quiver is provided to you by the Lord, only he knows how big it is, and you carefully and judiciously take those arrows out and fire them, you will be firing arrows into that whetstone, into that ring. But if you don't do that, if you don't have an ordered view of your life, you won't do it. Or if you're thinking about work-life balance, you'll never achieve it because it's impossible. Yeah. So maybe the older men in your life aren't doing that. You know, maybe they're going at it haphazardly rather than deliberately, which, you know, gives me an opportunity to say, get them out to F3. It'll help them. I guarantee it'll help them. I guarantee it won't hurt them.
Well, and there's something that is inclusive in what you're speaking of right now, and it's giving. If you give, you'll get. And giving's not money necessarily. Giving is from your heart and your soul and your being. And there's something I want to say on all this. You know, everybody's trying. When will we learn to just be? That whole concept right there, just learn to be you. Because people try. And it's the trying that makes us confused. Just learn to be. And y'all do that at F3. You teach men how to be themselves, how to find themselves, because a lot of people don't know really who they are and what they're here for. They're confused. And that's my whole purpose behind Put Tools in Schools, is to help kids find direction in a mental discipline way to think for themselves. Because when you use your hands with your mind, that's you and you only. And that's all dependent upon yourself. And that builds character and self-esteem, which we all need. That's what Put Tools in Schools is all about for me. Yep, it's about fixing things, but it's also about being purpose-filled and self-contained and self-confident. And that's just what we all need to become. And we're not, are we?
Not enough. I agree with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, once again, if you want to participate with it, y'all meet how often?
Every day.
Every day.
So in Charlotte, for instance, there's probably five, Charlotte Metro, there's probably five workouts at least a day. Gotcha. Of different levels, different types of things, running, boot camp kind of thing, and at different levels. So some of these workouts are very, very difficult and strenuous, and some are less so.
Right.
Because we have to meet the men where they are.
I got you. Well, I'm going to read something here kind of apropos to today. I'm not going on my Boston trip I spoke to everyone about, because we have a medical situation here, and someone's may not be with us much longer, and poem reflects this, okay? For we know not when such powerful acknowledgement to not accept, but rather understand, life has an expiration date. From the moment we breathe our first breath until we breathe our last, every moment in between has consequences. Am I living my best life? Am I honoring my truth? The gifts God appointed me, am I wasting the moments in between? Someone you love is on the balancing point, and unfortunately, you don't hold the balance. That tipping point is in God's hands, and with desperate pleading, you know you have to let go. Neither time nor space nor bonding of life's connections will ever alter the fact there is a powerful emotional knot we refuse to untie. You must keep that knot. It remains your last hope. That knot is tied within your heart. We don't listen. We refuse to listen. So the begging begins to let us keep that knot tied. For whatever it's worth, we refuse to untie it. It's such a powerful, loving knot. Truly, how can it untie without our permission? Sometimes, at best, the emotional knot we hold in our hands causing calluses. The refusal to untie, to free ourselves from a life so loved, a bond of life which fueled ours. We don't care about calluses. The knot staying tied is worth any pain. Yet there it remains, and our hope and our lives are all tied up in that knot. I am not by any means condemning such. I myself am currently at that juncture. I believe these words. I write. Do not preach wisdom, but rather comfort. Today it took courage to release that knot, to unleash that tightrope, allowing it to just fall. It hurts so much to hold on. It hurts so much to let go. That knot is also hurting your loved one, fighting to hold on, not for them, but for you. I decided today to free that knot, to let it drop where it must land. This is a moment, and only in that moment will all life surrender, not in our hands anymore, to release a cognitive proportion, not one of emotional bonding, for in releasing the knot, we release the bondage held by our hearts. A life cannot live when tied up in knots. A life cannot pass on when tied up in knots. Such freedom granted in life, such freedom granted to leave, truly life lessons. Lessons to grant everyone who has a knot tied to our heart. Untying that knot is okay. Once that rope falls to the ground, all hands are free, all hearts are free, and our soul, our loving divine soul, will pick that knot up. And instead of binding constrictions of a life holding on, the soul picks up that rope. and with magical caressing ties a soft bonding, a knot only the divine knows. Not tight, not forceful, not of restraint, not of fear. It's just a knot of love. Bonding that loving soul, giving you permission to allow that heart of ours to let go. For in truth, we never know the outcome of letting go. That's not our decision. I, for one, am a lousy knot maker. I am truly grateful to relinquish such a qualified talent to the divine energy to craft exactly the right one at the right times. Prayers for you, my brother Michael. Pretty deep, pretty meaningful, and very beautiful. But we're all going to go away on this planet. We're not meant to be here forever. We all live, we love, we die. We got to do the right thing in between that first breath and our last. And that's what we're talking about today. I appreciate each guy here today. I really do. You got any words of closing? Any words of wisdom, guys? No, none.
No.
No, not you.
No.
You've said plenty.
Yeah.
You really do. Thank you all. And Dr. Belding, we will have a discussion soon.
I look forward to it.
Because the middle schools are the best age to grab kids and change a life in adolescence. Seventh grade study by Harvard. Fact.
Mm-hmm.
Seventh graders. Most impressionable. Now go spread some love. I'm going to do the same. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. That's F3Nation.com. More info. Go make it a great week. We'll see you next week. Somebody will, right here on About Your House. Yeah.